Welcome to Reading the Book of Mormon with Ryan. I'm Ryan Rydell, and I live here in New York City. Today we have a very special guest, Nate, and you're from here in New York City as well, correct?
Yes, yes, indeed.
And where do you fall on the LGBTQAI plus scale?
I identify as being gay.
All right, and where do you fall on the active, semi-active, inactive, post-Mormon, ex-Mormon, non-Mormon scale?
I would say I'm active, but I'm also dating men on the side as well. So it's a mix of both worlds.
Literally, you're either active or you're not. You're either semi-active.
No, I'm active.
Ugh, duh, I wasn't asking about your dating life. But those now of you know. Who are interested and wanting to date Nate, come to New York City. He's great. And did you serve a mission?
I did serve a mission.
Where did you serve?
In Nova Scotia, Canada.
Oh, that sounds great.
No, I loved it so much that I wanted to serve somewhere foreign, but I also wanted somewhere safe. And I was actually praying for Quebec. And I got Nova Scotia, so I felt like it was in the ballpark of what I wished for, and Lord heard my prayer.
I wanted somewhere, this has nothing to do with the Book of Mormon right now, this is a personal tangent, but what I wanted was somewhere that spoke a foreign language where I could get McDonald's. And I served in Argentina, and I could walk from the mission office to a McDonald's.
I mean, that's a good, safe option. Like, you have exoticness, but also familiar, like, something similar.
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Something safe. We are going to be reading 1 Nephi chapter 3 out of the Book of Mormon. And do you want to start or do you want me to start?
Let's see. I will start. Let's start the show.
All right, let's go.
Okay. And it came to pass that I, Nephi, returned from speaking with the Lord to the tent of my father.
And it came to pass that he spake unto me, saying, Behold, I have dreamed a dream, and in which the Lord hath commanded me that thou and thy brethren shall return to Jerusalem.
For behold, Laban hath the record of the Jews, and also the genealogy of my forefathers, and they are engraven upon plates of brass.
Wherefore the Lord hath commanded me that thou and thy brothers should go unto the house of the Laban and seek the records and bring them down hither into the wilderness.
And now behold, my brothers murmur, saying, It is hard, it is a hard thing which I require of them. But behold, I have not required it of them, but it is a commandment of the Lord.
Therefore, go, my son, and thou shalt be favored of the Lord, because thou hast not murmured.
And it came to pass that I, Nephi, said unto my father, I will go and do the things which the Lord hath commanded, for I know that the Lord giveth no commandments unto the children of men, save he shall prepare a way for them, that they may accomplish the thing which he commandeth them.
And it came to pass that when my father had heard these words, he was exceedingly glad, for he knew that I would have been blessed of the Lord.
And I, Nephi, and my brethren took our journey in the wilderness with our tents to go up to the land of Jerusalem.
And it came to pass that when we had gone up to the land of Jerusalem, I and my brethren did consult one with another.
And we cast lots, who of us should go in unto the house of Laban. And it came to pass that the lot fell upon Laman. And Laman went into the house of Laban, and he talked with him as he sat in his house.
And he desired of Laban that the record which had been engraved upon the plates of brass, which contained the genealogy of his father.
And behold, it came to pass that Laban was angry, and thrust him out of his presence, and he would not that he should have the records. Wherefore he said unto him, Behold, thou art a robber, and I will slay thee.
But Laban fled out of his presence, and held the things which Laban had done unto us. And we began to be exceedingly sorrowful, and my brethren were about to return unto my father in the wilderness.
But behold, I said unto them, As the Lord liveth, and as we live, we shall not go down unto our father in the wilderness until we have accomplished the thing which the Lord hath commanded us.
Wherefore, let us be faithful in keeping the commandments of the Lord. Therefore, let us go down to the land of our fathers' inheritance. For behold, he left gold and silver and all manner of riches, and all this he hath done because of the commandments of the Lord.
For he knew that Jerusalem must be destroyed because of the wickedness of the people.
For behold, they rejected the words of the prophets. Wherefore, if my father should dwell in the land after he hath been commanded to flee out of the land, behold, he would also perish. Wherefore, it must needs be that he flee out of the land.
And behold, it is wisdom in God that we should obtain these records, and we may preserve unto our children the language of our fathers.
And also that we may preserve unto them the words which have been spoken by the mouth of all the holy prophets, which have been delivered unto them by the Spirit and the power of God since the world began and even down unto the present time.
And it came to pass that after this manner of language did I persuade my brethren that they might be faithful in keeping the commandments of God.
And it came to pass that we went down to the Lord of our land of our inheritance, and we did gather together our gold and our silver and our precious things.
And after we had gathered these things together, we went up again unto the house of Laban.
And it came to pass that we went into And it came to pass that we went in unto Laban and desired him that he would give us the records which were engraved upon the plates of brass, for which we would give unto him our gold and our silver and our precious things.
And it came to pass that when Laban saw our property and that it was exceedingly great, he did lust after it, insomuch that he thrust us out and sent servants to slay us, that he might obtain our property.
And it came to pass that we did flee before the servants of Laban, and we were obliged to leave behind our property, and it fell into the hands of Laban.
And it came to pass that we fled into the wilderness, and the servants of Laban did not overtake us, and we did hid ourselves in a cavity of a rock.
And it came to pass that Laban was angry with me, and also with my father, and also with Lemuel, for he hearkened unto the words of Laman. Wherefore Laman and Lemuel did speak many hard words unto us, their younger brothers, and did smite us even with a rod.
And it came to pass, as they smote us with a rod, behold, an angel of the Lord came and stood before them, and he spake unto them, saying, Why do ye smite your younger brother with a rod? Know ye not that the Lord has chosen him to be a ruler over you? And this because of the iniquities of your iniquities. Behold, ye shall go up to Jerusalem again, and the Lord will deliver Laban into your hands.
And after the angel had spoken unto us, he departed.
And after the angel had departed, Laman and Lemuel again began to murmur, saying, How is it possible that the Lord will deliver Laban into our hands? Behold, he is a mighty man, and he can command 50, yea, even he can slay 50, then why not us?
All right, so what are your impressions just reading that? Like, what stands out to you?
One thing that stands out to me is really getting the perspective of how Nephi is writing this. It really does sound like a journal compared to, like, a third party writing it. You definitely get the sense that this is Nephi writing this section.
And he's writing it from his perspective of, like, this is what's happening to me, and this is kind of... Yeah, I can see that. One thing that's jumping out to me is the idea of fear versus love-based faith.
Mm.
So you have Laman and Lemuel, who have fear-based faith. And I can't tell if the fear is based on when they go back into the city because their father asked them to. So Nephi goes because he has love-based faith because of his father. And Laman and Lemuel have fear-based faith. But I can't tell if it's because they're scared to stay in the desert, or is it because they're scared of doing the wrong thing, or scared of not getting the what little inheritance there is left of, like, being in charge of the family, or what is it that they are, like, what is the fear, like, what? And then you see Nephi kind of give him a pep talk, I don't know, towards 10 and 11, and let's see, and Laminel went into the house of Laban and talked to him, and said, and Laminel records what gave upon the place, blah, blah, blah. Laban was angry and thrust him out of the presence, blah, blah, blah. And Laman fled out. Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay. So around 14, 15, 16 is where Nephi's love-based faith convinces Laman and Lemuel, in one of a few instances, like, his love and faith for the Lord is so, well, palpable, I guess you would say, and potent that Laman and Lemuel catch it, if you will.
I can see that. Even though you could say that their faith was fear-based, that I still think it's nice that, like, they actually went. That I think sometimes we kind of give Laman and Lemuel just this hard pass of, like, they're the bad brothers. I mean,
are they bad, or are they just misunderstood, or we've painted them to be the bad guy?
I think it's a little bit of both, because we have Nephi's perspective of, you know, him telling his story versus their perspective on it. But I don't know, it's also just hard to see, like, for example, just when the angel comes and says, hey, stop beating your brother, which, you know, the way that it's written, it sounds like beating, you know, Nephi and his younger brother with a rod, like, that sounds horrible. It's also from Nephi's perspective, but also to have the angel saying he's chosen to be a ruler over you, like, it's kind of a hard thing to, it's a different perspective that, like, us currently in our day and age, like, the prophet wouldn't come out and be like, your sister is going to be the ruler over you. Like, that's not a perspective that I guess we're used to, so.
I like the feminist touch there.
Yes.
But I think there's a lot of things in this chapter to me that, like, if we look at through modernist eyes, that there's a lot of things that of violence and physical harm and toxic masculinity and, like, how we can kind of, like look at the story and then bring those to the present day. But then if you look at it the way that, like, here's Nephi's story, and this is how he views his brothers.
Mm.
So, if you're saying, like you were saying earlier, like, if this is a journal, and this is the way he views his brothers, he kind of has a little bit of, he's pigeonholing his brothers in kind of this bad guy mentality. Like, I mean, Billie Eilish is a bad guy, and I guess Nephi is making, you know, Laman and Lemuel his Billie Eilish.
I mean, I can see that. I don't want to give Nephi too much of the benefit of the doubt, saying that he's, like, he has an obscure perspective. I just think it's important to note. I think one thing that I was just thinking of just now that's great that you see from their two perspectives is, like, Nephi is an opportunist. Like, he's very optimistic.
Oh, I like that. I did like that, and I was actually going to talk about that later, but yes, I agree with you.
Because, like, we can still note that Laman and Lemuel, like, they did the things, but they did it, like, you know, with a sour face instead. Like, and, you know, that's still the perspective of Nephi, but, like, we could still say, like, they were a little bit more pessimistic. They still did the thing, but they did it, like, you know, not willingly as much.
I think also towards the end of the chapter, when we talk about Laman and Lemuel, okay, so the angel comes, mm-hmm. talks to them. To me, at this point, their faith is gone because now they have a knowledge. Right. They know that this is what God wants them to do, but they are very terrified of doing it because they know the strength
mm-hmm.
of what Laban can do. So I don't think it's a faith-based question. I think it's a fear-based, and it's a rational fear-based. I don't think that they're bad guys at all. I think that they see the problem. They hear the message from the angel, and I think they're scared. I don't think it's a matter of faith or being good or bad as much as it is as I want to live to see tomorrow, and that's, I don't know. What do you...
Well, without getting into the context of the next chapter, just like from perspective of where we're at, like they don't know how they're going to get delivered from the Lord. That the angel says, yes, like we will help you and get the brass plates with the Lord's help, you know, but from their perspective, that Laban being this powerful person, that, you know, they can't see with worldly eyes how it's physically possible to accomplish these things, but, you know, there will be a way. They just can't see it yet.
Also, there's a very funny word choice that, where is it? In verse 26, mm-hmm. we were obliged to leave behind our property.
Yeah, that's true. I didn't see that before. That's funny.
I just thought about that. Like, there's something I want to talk about later on in the episode, but like, but that I was like, it's such a funny kind of like, Laban's like, go kill them. And they were like, and we were obliged to leave behind our belongings. And so like, for me, like, I've always thought that a funny word choice, and I've always thought it as very unapplicable to me. Like, what a funny kind of like word choice. But now as I'm older and I've like had some experiences in my life, I'm like, oh, this makes I like totally get this.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it even just shows you Nephi's optimistic perspective of like, our money was stolen from me, versus like, oh, like it just happened to not work out, you know?
Oh, yeah. This was a bad breakup.
Yeah, it's just like, oh shucks, it didn't work out. Because
like, we were going in different directions. Yes. And it was, I felt like I wanted to leave him in peace, so I felt obliged to leave him with good thoughts.
Well, and just going back to, you were mentioning like Nephi gives Laman Lemuel a pep talk, and he goes through like, hey, let's problem solve it a different way, like just talking to him won't work. And so he says, well, let's try giving him some of our property. But then he, like, has this to, like, bring on the perspective, like, but remember, like, we left this land and we left our property because, like, the Lord said to. Like, he throws in the extra perspective of just, like, we're going to use this property, but it's to get the plates, not, like, don't be sad that we've left behind our property. It's like he's just making sure to... I don't know, it comes off as very Peter Priesthood, which is very funny.
I can see that too, but I also am like, did it say that they murmured because of that? What verse is that in? And I behold and pay them that as the Lord giveth, the Lord will take down. Wherefore let us faithful
keep. Because they were about to leave, mm-hmm. is what they, I Lord. Think it.
Okay, so wherefore let us be faithful in keeping the commandments of the Lord, wherefore gold and silver and all manner of riches, all the commandments of Gore, for behold, rejected, and he would perish and preserve into our faith, prophets.
When verse 14 is when they're exceedingly sorrowful and they're about to go back to the wilderness, and that's when Nephi's like, no, as the Lord liveth, we're not going to leave. We're going to accomplish the thing that the Lord accomplishes. Then he goes into, all right, this is how we're going to do it. And then... could have just ended there of like, okay, we're going to do it.
There's not a lot of murmuring from Laman and Lemuel as I thought. As I grew up, I used to think they murmured at every little thing. Mm-hmm. But I feel like through this part, it's like they understand like, okay, this sucks. Okay, Nephi, well, we're going to buy into your optimism. We're gonna do this. And they do it. They go back to their house. They gather up their things. They put it in a box. They walk it over to Laban's house. And hit Laban's like, kill these guys. And they're like, and we were obliged to leave. So, like, until they get chased away because they're scared to death that they were about to be killed, that's when they really start to murmur. So, it's like, I feel like...
in a way, it's slightly justified until they take it to the next level of beating their brother with a rod. But, But no, even earlier in the chapter, they cast lots which, you know, to me is like they threw dice or like they drew straws or they did something to choose at random who would be the one to go to Laban. So even in that moment, Nephi, like, didn't volunteer in the beginning. It was like, all right, who wants to go? And, you know, it was like no one volunteered, so they decided to cast lots. So it was kind of everyone, I don't know, it does feel like everyone was in the same boat, that there wasn't murmuring, but it was also not like Nephi wasn't stepping up either at that moment either, until like they were about to run away. It's like, no, we need to accomplish the thing that we need to accomplish.
All right, so if you're listening, we're going to take a quick break, we're going to come back, and we're going to continue talking. But when we come back, we're going to talk about this section from our point of view. And welcome back. So, if you are just joining us, hopefully this is a podcast. You've probably already downloaded the entire episode. So, we're going over 1 Nephi chapter 3 by the title of the episode. So you'd know that as well. And we're talking about right now how this chapter applies directly to myself, Ryan Riedel, and our guest, Nate.
Me.
That is you. So I'm going to let you go first. So how do you feel, and what does this feel like to you?
Right. So this has one of the whole scripture masteries, you know, one of the cliches of I will go and do. That's one of the things I've always taken away from this chapter. But for me, I've kind of shifted the perspective of the verse, a little bit less about the commandments and more about just I will go and do. And for me, I've lived my life in fear of not making decisions as quick as I can, of just the fear of what that decision can lead to. But in a verse like this, and in this chapter, just having Nephi so willing to just go up and go and just go for it, like a very actionable faith. Regardless of what, you know, not knowing the outcome of what's going to happen, that I definitely like that and apply that more to my life now, of just being able to be more actionable and just go with my gut, go with the spirit and do something, versus just thinking about it and taking a long time to actually make something happen.
Okay. So, for me, this chapter illustrates kind of like the faith-based and fear-based faiths for me. And so, for me, I'd say like my first 32 years of life are very much Laman and Lemuel. Like, very much. Like, I don't think I had faith because I believed it. I had faith because there was so much fear and family pressure and, like, this is what you need to do, and if you don't do this, this is what's going to happen. So, for me, it's not about love. My faith was about fear, and I'd say after I got married to my husband, maybe like a year or two before I got married, when I moved to New York City, but I'd say definitely I'm more of a Nephi faith now, where it's like, it's love-based, and it's, I can look past your fear base and your love base and see you as a human being and as a person. And I think that's where I am now. And I think this is a great chapter to illustrate, like, fear-based faith isn't sustainable, and love-based faith can take a lot, even a beating from your brothers. And it can take a lot of criticism and physical abuse and emotional abuse, and like, it can take a lot, and it also can be guided by the spirit, but when you're in a fear base, no thank you.
That actually reminds me of something. The kind of the last half of the I will go and do is that the Lord will provide a way, and talking about fear and the Lord providing a way, I definitely, and then this is one of the classic on my mission, For me, I did have one of those moments where I was just extremely terrified on my mission of fear of not knowing what the right decision to make was. You know, as a missionary, there were so many different additional commandments and guidelines as a missionary, aside from
the wonderful actual... white Bible.
Yes.
As we were told not to call it that, but no one stopped calling it that.
It was the easiest way to know what you were talking about. But yes, the missionary guidelines, aka the white Bible.
Ugh. I found mine the other... No, I saw mine... I don't remember. I think it's upstairs somewhere.
Mine's buried with a bunch of other missionary stuff. But,
I'm going to look for it this afternoon.
So, there were a lot of, like, specific things, like, you know, making sure you're teaching someone, like, if you're teaching someone of the opposite sex, that you have, like, a third party, or, like, you're not supposed to drive a stranger's car, or just, like, a whole bunch of messy stuff, like, never leave your companion. And I remember being so fearful of making sure to keep those commandments that sometimes it actually, like, would hinder missionary work in the spirit. And I remember being so scared of this one weird situation where an investigator, I'm trying to remember the full context now, but basically something had happened where she needed to get home to her child, and she couldn't drive a car, but I could drive a car, and my companion had to stay behind to help out of, like, this weird traffic situation. What? Oh, because, okay, the... so he had a car, we had a car as well, so he had to drive our car, and then I had to drive their car, and it was like, okay.
What?
I know, so it was one of those moments where
I'm so,
like,
confused.
Yeah, and I'm horrible at telling stories, so apologies. But, so I basically had to decide, should I drive this woman's car? Should I help her in this situation? And, like, you know, running off prayers off the top of my head was like, yes, do this. This is going to be the right thing to do. And, like, later on that night, I just remember, like, being so fearful. Like, I'm, like, going to die because I broke the rules. But, you know, later on was like, no, everything's going to be fine because I tried to live by the Spirit and try to have the Lord, like, help provide that way of, like, okay, so this is a sticky situation, you know, a really random situation. Let's figure out how to solve it versus, you know, going with, like, no, these are the rules, and just kind of putting your foot down and not...
Spirit of the law, letter of the law.
Yes, exactly. But I don't know, like, because of that moment, it became so much easier to say, you know, Lord, this feels like the right decision. If it's not, you know, like, stop me. If not, like, help provide that way. Help prepare me. Help guide me. And it just made it a lot easier to trust the Lord in those moments. Like, I don't know what's going to happen, but hey, it's going to be all right. Put faith in God and things will work out.
So, I like that. In my mind, all I could think of was, like, on my mission, there were a couple times that I lived in an apartment of four people, and there was, like, one missionary that would be overly attractive more than others, and, like, trying to keep my thoughts, like, on missionary work and, like, trying to do things. And I remember one of my missionary companions... who would always be like, every once in a while, like, yeah, just hear him from another room being like, I will go, I will do the things the Lord commands. And in my mind, I was like, oh, maybe I should, like, have that mentality.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, I need that. I think that for me, we use the I will go, I will do very, very toxically and almost mm-hmm. like, I think that because this is Nephi saying, this isn't Ryan saying, I will go, I will do. This Ryan's like, I'm trying,
mm-hmm,
but mm-hmm. I will try and make it there, and I will try and do it. But Nephi had conviction that I don't think I've ever had at any point in my life. So, like, for me, when we use, say, I will go, I will do, I feel like we have to be careful about how we say that and how we teach that to people because... of the driving away of the spirit. And it's like, you know?
No, I definitely agree. And I think going back to the whole, this is Nephi's perspective, and like we have to see the full perspective on it, that like just because Laman and Lemuel didn't say they will go and do, like, they still went. They still
did.
Yeah.
I mean, they did everything Nephi did, except, and they beat Nephi. But, I mean, like, Nephi didn't beat himself. Maybe he did. He didn't explain.
No.
But he's like in the, was it the Da Vinci Code, where he's beating him with that, himself with that, like, flogger?
No. Oh, no, thank you.
What? You didn't like that scene? All the blood? But, but I see there's faith. And one thing that I think we all overlook, and what jumped out to me, and this is the part that really stuck and resonates with me while I was preparing for this, is like everyone's showing faith here except Laban. Like,
yes,
the way, and like we need to get off Laman and Lemuel about being like what they've done, because they showed faith. Did they show faith for the right reason? Maybe, maybe not. We're not getting their perspective, but we're getting Nephi's perspective, saying that they did it. They did do these things. So mm-hmm. I think that, like, for myself, I tried to, like, this morning someone said something that was not nice to me about this podcast. And for me, I'm trying to be like, why did they say that? And how did they say that? And what was their intention behind what they said? But I'm like, they're a friend, so there's got to be some niceness there. But at the same time, I'm like, but I've explained to them prior to what they said, everything that they said, and I feel like they said it more in an aggressive way. So I'm like trying to, like, still as we're talking, I'm like mildly thinking about it. So it's very present in my mind right now.
Well, that is definitely one of the perspectives from the story, is like, yes, there's the I will go and do, and then the first thing that they encounter is a wall that Laban's like, no, why would I give you that?
They're thieves.
Yeah.
Get them out of here.
And so things don't always go the way that you want. You can't always control someone else's perspective, like not even your family. But like,
what? That's shocking.
No.
As someone who doesn't talk to their family except one sister, that's shocking.
But what was I going to say? Just that because you don't know how things are going to work out, just from like the overall metaphor of this to me is like, be optimistic and problem solve. Like, it doesn't work out this way, try it from a different angle and keep going and keep trying. And like, if you need to stop, you can stop. But I guess also if the Lord sends an angel and says, no, keep going, then you're like, all right, I'll keep going.
Yeah, I can see that. I mean, but I also like this part for me about, like, was it Laman? Laban who went by himself to Laman went to Laban
mm-hmm.
by himself.
Yes. He was the one who got the short straw when they cast lots.
I like how Nephi's like, I will go, I will do. And then he's like, hey, brother, you take the hit for all of us. So I can see how this is already setting Laman on a path to, like, because not only is he scared out of Laban's house, he's threatened with death
mm-hmm.
for the first time.
Well, and then, like, this is just, I don't want to paint Nephi too much as a villain in this situation.
I don't think Nephi is a villain. I think we're just looking at it from a new way that,
yeah.
I think the narrative of what we've been taught about, the way to look at the scriptures for so long, has been so whitewashed for us where we don't get to think.
Mm-hmm.
So I think now that we're starting to think of it, it's just because we think of someone in a new light, we're not automatically accusing them of being a villain or a good guy or a bad guy.
I know what you mean.
I know how to use words. I promise I'm not a calculator. But, yeah, thank you. I feel like we're trying to look at this in a way, because in the overall scheme of this podcast is that there's not one way to get to heaven. There's many ways, and all of our paths are different. So I think the idea of this podcast is to include voices so that we can all see the scriptures in a different way. So for you to feel free to say what you want to say.
Got it.
That was really long-winded and boring. I'm sorry.
No, I got it. So I was going to say that another thing that I noticed that was just an interesting word choice is that Nephi persuaded his brethren into like going and taking their money and going back to Laban.
But I think that's love-based. I think that's where he's like, my love for the Lord and my faith in the Lord is coming from such a positive space, is that like his brothers were like, wow, you are so, I feel like they bought into his like love and peace and like the harmony that the Lord can give us. And I think they bought into it. And I think that's what the persuasion is. You know what I mean? Like,
right. But I guess the point that I'm getting at is that like, it was a very, like one, just the word persuade, can be used as a word to describe something that Satan does. Not saying that Nephi is Satan, but to also just put the perspective of Nephi used a lot of verbal knowledge-based persuasion tactics to talk to Laban, to Laman and Lemuel, which I don't think is a bad thing. I just think, coming from my perspective of the church, that like, you know, and we don't have their perspective, but it would be interesting to also know, like, well, did, I don't know, Laman and Lemuel also pray about it? Like, did they just take it at face value of what their brother said and convince them of?
This is why we don't have their perspective, and so that we don't know these things, because, I mean, like, Nephi talks about, like, praying, and I feel like, I don't expressly say on every episode, like, I pray about this episode every time I record an episode, but, like, there's some things that are left out, not because that they're not important, it's because they're not for everyone, and sometimes it's for our betterment personally, and I think that might be one of those things, like, Laman and Lemuel may not want to have shared to share some details that they found spiritually uplifting for themselves at this point, you know, in their journey. Like, this is their journey, this is their life, this is their spiritual kind of progression, and Nephi may or may not be seeing what they're doing behind closed tent curtains.
Gotcha. Also, a random side note, I'm curious what you think.
Blue.
So, thank you. That was exactly what I needed to know. With the I will go and do, and the Lord's provided a way, and it deals with commandments, and the couple verses earlier of Nephi's father saying it's not a thing that I've required of it, but it's a thing that the Lord has required, that it's a commandment of the Lord. And I was trying to think of the different perspective of commandments versus, I'm trying to think of another word, like guidance. Like, for example, this is, well, so commandment and law, like, I would call those all the same thing, but then take this perspective of this commandment in this instance is go and get the plates. That, like, to me, that doesn't sound like a commandment. That sounds like guidance of the Lord. But the way that Lehi puts it is that this is a commandment of the Lord.
So explain it to me as if, like, I'm going to get pizza.
So
is this like, so Ryan, so you telling me to go get a pizza, is that a commandment or the rule? And then you saying that you want gluten-free crust and an almond-based cheese, is that the commandment? So like,
right.
So I'm trying to just relate it to like, how does this apply to you and me as human beings, so that like, is this, because I was thinking about that too, but I just don't know how to like, how does that apply to me, and how does that, you know what I mean? Like, because the rules are given to us by the prophets, seers, and revelators, but then they're also men. And at this time, we're having visits. So in Nephi's times, they're having visits from angels that everyone's talking about, and you're having all these marvelous works and these wonders that are happening. And nowadays, all we have is 15 white dudes who, you know, oh, I should say 14 white dudes and an Asian dude telling us, what's happening for the church. And it's like, is this the best thing for us or is it not? And also, you also have the similar same point of view, and you're not looking at things from a modernist point of view and how to reach people from modern technology. And like, so it's like, I just don't know how to articulate that mm-hmm. so that it relates to that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think one way I look at it is, so we have the commandments, things that, as far as I understand, pretty much apply to everyone. Or, you know, that's how we look at them. That, like, you know, classic example, thou shalt not kill. That generally should be applied to everyone, in general. We'll see that in the next chapter, spoilers. But then you have this specific commandment of thou shalt go and get the plates. That is a commandment to them. So I think, if anything, it might show the perspective of personal revelation and personal guidance of the Lord. That, like, I think they call it a commandment because...
I like it.
Because we can see, like, the readers, we can see from the perspective of, you know, why getting the brass plates was important. And, like... And to have it be, for them, issued as a commandment, like, because it's important, versus, like, the Lord said to do this, and it's like, okay, cool, should we do that? And it's like, no, this is a commandment. It's like, oh, okay, cool, we'll go and do that. That is guidance of the Lord, you know, very similar to us if we get a, you know, I have no idea what would happen if they didn't get the plates. But, for example, you know, we get personal revelation and personal guidance of the Spirit. Like, hey, we should reach out and talk to this person. Or we should go and do this one thing. And sometimes we say, sure, I'll do that. And other times we go, no, I'm not going to do that. I don't know if we could treat those as personal commandments. But, like, I would almost call that guidance as well.
So, I mean, like, so we're gonna I'm going to leave this question with you as we go head into a break. Is that, so with these commandments that are given and with modern day prophets talking about how homosexuality is a grievous or iniquitous sin, how do you and I see this applying to us nowadays? So we're going to go into a break now. And when we come back, we will continue this discussion talking about the LGBTQAI+ family. And welcome back. If you're just joining us again, you probably aren't just joining us because you've downloaded this episode and you already know that we're talking about 1 Nephi chapter 3 and with me, your host, Ryan Rydell, and our special guest, Timothy, Jonathan, Derek,
Nathan,
Lehman,
Lemuel.
Ah, yes. Neat. So now we're going to talk about how do following the commandments and the go, I will go, I will do, the choose the right type of things, like how do those affect us as the LGBTQAI+ family group? Like, how does that affect us? Like, to me, this chapter and the whole beginning of 1 Nephi has a lot of things that are very, like, relatable to the LGBTQAI community. Would you like to start?
Yes. Yeah, so one thing I forgot to mention in the last thing we're going to, just something that applied to me, as a gay member, that when I was first coming out, that this, I will go and do, and the Lord will provide a way to obey all the commandments. And, like, the Lord giveth no commandment to the children of men, since he shall prepare a way. Like to me, that was such a hard, wall to figure out. Like, did I have to go through this wall? Did I have to go around this wall? Did I just stick on the same side of the wall? And, you know, eventually I, you know, found what worked for me. But this was definitely a scripture that, like, became a cliche of my existence. And it became really hard to understand how to be a member and be gay.
I think for me as a member as LGBTQAI+, I mean, like, this is one of those things, like, last week it was like that aha moment when you and I started preparing for this, and, like, when I was preparing it, I was reading through it, I was just like, this was so bad for me. And you pointed out, and I was like, I think that if you're going to look at this, it's Nephi's point of view. Mm-hmm. It's not, you know, anyone else's point of view. And this is what he said about himself. And I get that this is something that we should strive to live for, I guess. But he's not a, like, he's not a deified being. Like, he's not Christ. We're not trying to be like Nephi. Shouldn't we try to be like Christ? And, like, this is the way he lived his path. And as LGBTQAI people, I think we're foraging our own path and trying to figure it out. And we come up against lots of, like, people throwing sticks at us. I mean, at church and abroad, just being gay. And, like, how many of us, like, I told my family I was a gay, and I was obliged to leave my belongings and never return.
Yes, I was going to say, there's a great allegory of us trying to do the right thing and it not necessarily working out in our favor.
And then how many of us turn into bitter, angry people because we tried to do the right thing for so long and because there's nothing out there for us, and we really want to be a part of the organization. We really want to express our faith. We want to express this. But the Laman and Lemuels and of the world out there are thinking that they're Nephi or thinking that they're better than us. Or instead of, like, including us, they are kind of, like, pushing us away and causing, you know, pause. Causing divisions in the church. So I feel like there's a lot of things with this whole idea of Laman and Lemuel that and the gay community is, like, I think there's some problems there, but I think that if we work together, I think there's a lot of things that can be fixed.
No, I think one thing that's great to know from this chapter is that there are different perspectives, and it really is okay to, I don't think we need to necessarily divide ourselves in saying that, you know, non-gay Mormons are Nephis and gay Mormons are Laman and Lemuels, like, not at all. I think it's also a perspective of tone and who you are, and that, like, your sexuality doesn't have to divide you of whether you're good or bad. You can still, like, be an optimist. You can still follow, you know, the commandments that you choose to follow. You can still be a better person. That there are members out there who, you know, at face value you think they are the Nephis, but, you know, maybe behind your back that they're more of their Laman and Lemuels.
Then they're not really Nephis, they're Laman and Lemuels. Because if they're behind your back doing something, that's a Laman and Lemuel move, not a Nephi move, from Nephi's perspective. But, I mean, there's a lot of things that when we talk about the goodness of the church and the badness of the church, and, like, we talk in such definitiveness, and I just want to be like, these are not as definitive as we think they are. And, but they're guidelines, and, like, to me, I think Laman and Lemuel have a hard time. I think they're the ones that are having a hard time with a lot of this, like, last minute, what is it called? Like, revelation. They're the ones that are having, because before their dad got the revelation to go into the wilderness, and before their dad got the revelation to go back, and their brother got the revelation to go to see Laban and sent Lemuel or Laman, and then to go back get, and then an angel appeared. I really feel like they would have been perfectly okay had their lives not, you know, I don't think they would have been that big of a problem. I think they would have been, like, just a regular, you know, faithful Jewish man living in Jerusalem and, like, no questions of faith. And I think the Lord is testing them, and they're trying to hold on the best they know how. And I think slowly, like, this shows, like, Nephi has a testament of love, and then they have a testament of fear, and that the fear is not sustainable when tested. And I think that a lot of the LGBTQAI people, when we get tested, we break. I mean, Thoughts? Bueller?
Well, it's definitely, you know, we we do get tested, and sometimes we do break, you know, not to the extent of having our brothers beat us with a rod. But I think...
You've never been beat up for being gay?
You know, thankfully, I haven't. Like, maybe...
I got... So, I know I've been sexually assaulted for being gay, and I know I've been physically attacked for being gay. One was at a Mormon college, and the other one was in high school.
I'm sorry. I did not know.
Life goes on.
Yes. Honestly, I feel like if anyone has beat me up, it's been mentally, and it's been myself.
Really?
Yes. If I had put my perspective of where I fell in the church, you know, pre-gay, it would have been, like, pre-understanding that I was gay, that, you know, I would have been one of the Peter priesthoods, like, one of the goody two-shoes.
I tried so hard, and it fails so flat. Like, it fails so, the person that I was so gross.
No, and to me, this is such a good allegory for all LGBTQ members of just, like, keep trying and keep problem solving, keep trying to be part of the church that, you know, you might not encounter such stress of, you know, being beaten with a rod. You know, if we're putting ourselves in the perspective of Nephi of going and doing and trying to find optimistic solutions to this problem of getting these plates, you know, like I said, we might not be faced with the challenge of, one, just the challenge of someone saying, no, you can't do this, you know, this Laban, but also having your peers, your family, your Laban and Lemuel saying, no, this isn't going to work either, but to have this extra support from the Lord saying, no, things will work out, keep going, the Lord will provide a way. I think that is a good message for us LGBTQ plus members, that we can keep trying, that I think in the end, because we're still here, this whole purpose of them getting the plates, you know, was to help restore the genealogy and to keep the records. Like, there was a bigger plan to this small commandment of getting the plates, which became this big hassle. I feel like as members of the LGBTQ that we do have a purpose and our own version of a commandment to stay in the church so that we can be a positive influence so things can move forward.
I think also, like, we have that kind of, like, that moment where it's like, you can show people that this black and white, you know, check this box, check this box, check this box, check this box, kind of, like, thing that we've been fed as members of the church is not necessarily a good thing, and B, that not necessarily fits every person, because we voted on individual agency, and I think this chapter shows the agency of three different brothers and the different choices and where they put their testimony and where they put their faith. And we as LGBTQAI people, like, we're all different and we're all trying things differently, and there's different... We talk about the Kinsey scale and how some of us are more gay than others and how their trans is a spectrum. And we talk about how queerness is a spectrum. And we talk about these different things. And I think faith is also a spectrum. And sometimes it's okay to have your faith in the middle of that spectrum. Here, Nephi has, his faith is fully put on the throttle. I will go, I will do. He's definitive. And Laman and Lemuel are, I would say, not at the holding on bare minimum faith, but they're probably, like, on the Kinsey scale is a 0 to 7. If we say this is a faith scale, like the Nephi scale of faith, I would say this is they're probably 2-3. Would you say that?
I'd say something like that. Something I was just thinking is that, like, maybe this is also a good allegory for non you know, gay members to say, maybe you don't need to be a 7 on the scale of optimism, because just it can be toxic sometimes that, like, oh, everything will work out. And, like, the very sunshiny approach to the gospel of like the, like, blind faithfulness.
Like, also, you don't need to be Nephi. Yes. You could be Nephi and have a very pessimistic attitude as well. but have blind faith. But then also, you can be super optimistic and have no faith.
Mm-hmm.
And I also think that, like gays, there's not one way to be trans. There's not one way to be a gay man. There's not one way to be have a gay marriage. There's not one way to be a lesbian. There's not one way to be bisexual.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's not, like, I get it. The media has lied to you. I don't know. Not everyone that you see on TV is a stereotype of what it means to be black or white or gay or straight. Like, I get it. There's more ways. And I think the church needs to see that as well, is that there's more than one way to live a righteous life. Because to me, at this point, Laman Lemuel really haven't done anything wrong in the Book of Mormon. Like, beating someone and with a rod, I mean, that's not nice, but is it a sin? Or is it just brothers being brothers over who's right and who's wrong?
Mm-hmm. Like, also from Nephi's perspective as well.
True.
Because
my brother used to hit me when I was younger.
I remember having stick wars with my friends, and, you know, that's all good and fun and playful. It's expressing one's anger, you know, is just how you choose to do that. Like, that's a lesson to learn. I wouldn't say it's, like,
also is
evidence that they're, like, horrible people.
Yeah, and also, like, think about it, like, at the time, this is appropriate, or is this appropriate at that time, like, to hit somebody with a stick? And also, you have to remember, like, Nephi's not the oldest brother, and Nephi is his father's favorite, and how does that affect the cultural dynamic of the oldest son becomes the property holder, and all of these, like, sub-cultural contexts, or whatever that, and mm-hmm. how does that affect, like, us as gay people about us being part of the church, and how does that affect people's view on the church? Because so many people believe that LGBTQAI people don't have faith of any kind. Wait a second. Nate, do you have faith?
No, certainly do.
But so do I. So how does that stand up if you're active, I'm active, I'm married, you're single and ready to mingle, and how do we stand up to that gays don't have faith?
Honestly, I feel like, we all have different, going back to the whole scale of how active you are, and for me personally, I'm very respectful, because it's a very complex world out there, and a lot of, you know, shit happens out there.
I try to be respectful, but let's be honest, sometimes I'm not. Especially when people want to bring up Oaks, I get very confrontational, and I know there's people that I'm friends with who are like, oh, I've met Oaks, he's a really nice guy. I just want to be like, well, his general conference talks and his other things don't prove that. Mm-hmm. So, do you want to talk to me about that again? And they're like, and I just want to be like,
well, what I was going to say is I have so much respect for our community, that LGBTQ plus, that we, like, compared to, our Nephi figure in this situation, where, like, I wouldn't say his life is perfect, not at all, but, like, he has a perspective that's very, blindly optimistic, which, you know, to each their own, but I think as, you know, part of this community, that we have such a unique perspective and a unique hardship, that I think everything becomes more real for us. Like, for me, growing up in the church, you know, like, we'd sing the primary hymn, you know, I will go and do. And, like, it just kind of got ingrained in your soul of, I'm going to do these things because that's what I know. And
or it kind of almost felt like it's, you do these things because you have to.
Right.
Because it's like, if you don't do this, you can't do this. And if you can't do this, you can't have your family, you can't have exaltation,
mm-hmm.
you can't have this. And then why did you even start?
Right. And for us particular members, that, like, this is a foundation-shaking trial that we have to deal with. And, you know, we handle it very differently. But it's something that I think we you know, if we choose to, we can grow from it and expand our faith, but also just become more real in the gospel that, like, not saying before I was a robot before, but, like, definitely after, you know, figuring things out, but also still on this journey figuring things out, that, like, I feel like I can be more down to earth and more relatable to people and more sympathetic and empathetic and have a heart towards other situations that I had zero perspective on before. So
I think that, I mean, like, right on that, I mean, like, I think as we get more marginalized as human beings, not just because we're LGBTQAI, but I think, like, when you're a marginalized person for any reason, women, color, sexual orientation, national origin, like, when you feel that marginalization, all of a sudden your world starts to open up in a way that, like, oh, other people can be marginalized too.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's one of those wonderful things about the scriptures, is that we start to see things from other people's points of view. So real quick, who do you see yourself being in this chapter? Like, if you had to be one of the people in the chapter that you say most relates to yourself today, who would you say you most relate to being in this chapter?
I mean, honestly, I would still say Nephi to this day, but from the perspective of that, like, I am that annoying optimist. Like, if we were on a hiking trail or out going camping and, like, or, like, on a date where it's just rainy and crappy, like, I would still, like, try to find that silver lining of, like, why it's a nice thing and just be the most randomly optimistic and flexible person in that situation. That's just my personality. So in that sense, I really do relate to Nephi the most. But I don't know, I'm also going to cheat and say I really do relate to Laman and Lemuel as well, where it's like, it's okay to be angry, not, you know, to the extent of expressing it, but, like, it's okay to, you know, murmur a bit, but, like, to still be faithful and go and do.
Don't you want to be his father and Laban at the same time?
No, those two will leave on the table.
I think I would be the rod, because I honestly don't know how I, like, for me, I'm like, I...
You want to be manhandled, is what you're saying.
That is enjoyable. That is enjoyable. But what I'm saying is that, for me, I see aspects of each person that I can relate to, but I don't feel like I am any of them.
Mm-hmm.
But there are characteristics of all of them that when I break them down individually, that I can relate to all of them.
Mm.
So that is my point of view. But, so quick question, and this will be my final question. If someone was coming to New York and they wanted to get hold of you, Nate, if they were single and ready to mingle as well, how could they get a hold of you? Or do you want to be get a hold of? Do you want to be get in touch with? Get in touch with? Is that even English? Wow, I am terrible.
You're totally fine. I will say that if you're in town and you happen to go to the Harlem YSA, happy to say hi and meet you there. Otherwise, we'll kind of let fate dictate itself and see if we happen to bump into each other on the subway.
Oh... I have run into several people on the subway in very awkward manners. It's truly a delight. But again, this has been Reading the Book of Mormon with Ryan. Today we had the opportunity to record in front of a live studio audience. Thank you, Sabrina. And if you are in the New York area and you are a member of the LGBTQAI community and you would like to participate in Reading the Book of Mormon with Ryan, feel free to contact us at pioneerprojects82@gmail.com, and we would love to schedule an opportunity for you to come on and have your own episode. Thank you for so much, and thank you for joining us doing the Book of Mormon with Ryan. You know who's next week?
Oh, who's that?
John.
Oh, I love John.
Everybody loves John, but I thought he was episode 2, and then I was like, no, he's episode 4. I mean, chapter 2, he's chapter 4. So I was wrong on chapter 1 when I told everyone that he's chapter 2. I was wrong. Oops.
Well, fun.
It's going to be fun. Anyway. Bye.